Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Our country's latest mass shooting took place at a busy shopping mall near Dallas, Texas. Reporter Chris Fox.
Gunfire erupted at the Allen Premium Outlets Mall around 4 p.m. Colleen Korchak and her son witnessed it firsthand.
My son ran to the doorway and immediately saw the shooter dressed all in black. We saw him with this big, huge rifle shooting.
Allen Police Chief Brian Harvey says they believe it was a lone gunman.
One of our officers was on an unrelated call, went to the gunshots, engaged the suspect, and neutralized the suspect.
Eight people were killed. Illinois will get more money to continue giving health care to non-citizens. Details from WBBM Radio's Dave Brenner.
Both the cost of providing care and the number of enrollees have far outpaced the current estimates. The cost for Illinois to continue providing health care coverage to non-citizens who are otherwise ineligible for Medicaid benefits has been revised upward to over $1 billion for the upcoming fiscal year. As of the end of March, the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services estimated it would cost that much to fund the program that provides state-funded health care to individuals age 42 and older who would otherwise qualify for Medicaid if not for their citizenship status.
Ukraine has accused Russia of using phosphorus bombs on a besieged city. Correspondent Adriana Diaz reports.
In drone video released by Ukraine, Bakhmut can be seen ablaze as what appears to be phosphorus rains down. And according to a Human Rights Watch report, phosphorus can burn through metal. Its use is considered a war crime when deployed against civilians.
Meantime, dozens of Ukrainians showed up to donate blood for civilians and soldiers yesterday. This woman says she was there doing her duty.
Even before the invasion, I donated the blood because we have a lot of operations or something like that when hospitals need blood.
Some help for teachers looking for a home in Arizona. CBS's Stephen Kaufman with details.
In many cities, the cost of housing is skyrocketing, leaving the average renter out in the cold. And that's causing teacher recruitment issues for the Prescott, Arizona school district.
Many people say to us, we've always wanted to live in Prescott. What a beautiful place. Then they call us back and say, I had no idea how expensive it is to live there.
The answer, build homes for teachers. Assistant School Superintendent Clark Tenney.
Four of them will be available for our teachers. They're about 900 square feet each, concrete slab and modular homes.
And rent will be about $1,200. It's going to cost the district almost $1 million. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers.
Today we're going to be spending time on a topic we have been wanting to talk about for months, the paid caregiver crisis. This is different from the family caregiver crisis, but they are very intertwined. It's important for us to distinguish them, though, so that we can make really concerted and effective advocacy efforts. So we are joined tonight with an expert on this topic, Beth Swedeen, the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities.
Yes, and thank you, Beth, for joining us today. Before we dig in, I just want to share a few startling statistics, because I'm all about those darn statistics, regarding the paid caregiver profession and why everyone, regardless if you're a caregiver or not, should be concerned about this. And the first is, in 2022, 28% of residential family caregiver positions were left unfilled.
I'm going to just correct you, Liza. It wasn't family. It's 28% of resident facility caregiver positions. So just to help people understand, that means if you've got somebody who you want in a nursing home or an assisted living or one of those rehab places, 28% of those positions are empty right now.
Yes, my bad. And when you compare that to the 3.5% current unemployment rate nationally, it's alarming.
Yeah.
And the other is 18,000 Wisconsinites sought services from a long-term care facility but were denied or delayed due to staff shortages. So could you imagine being in the position where you needed care and they say, get in line, there's only 17,999 people behind you.
I know, exactly. It's shocking.
It is. And on that note, I want to welcome Beth Swedeen from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, who has been a leader in the state for advocating on this issue. Beth, those statistics are alarming to everyone. Can you tell listeners why this is a societal issue that everyone, regardless if they're a family caregiver or not, needs to get behind?
Sure. Thanks, Liza and Kristen, for having me on your show and for shining a spotlight on this really, it's a crisis that has hit Wisconsin, but is hitting our country nationally. And quite frankly, it has to do with the fact that more and more people in our country and in Wisconsin need care every year, and the labor market isn't keeping pace. So we just don't have enough of those working age people, 18 to 59, who can support, you know, not just older adults, but people, children with disabilities and children and adults with disabilities and others. So there, it's a very mixed population. In my field, people with disabilities are living much longer than they ever have before. And so they're going to need a lifetime of care, you know, or support. So maybe from childhood on into their 70s. So that's something that our society just has not set itself up to do. So that's the problem. And then on some of the things that you talked about, the wages, the benefits, the lack of status, the social isolation of being a caregiver, you know, in someone's home where you don't have colleagues and you don't have camaraderie, all of those contribute. Just to add to the statistics, in-home workers in Wisconsin make $13.53 an hour on average. So $3 to $4 less than retail right now. And 40% have some sort of benefit, and that's it. So wow. Less than half have benefits.
Ouch.
So I think, you know, that's a perfect storm to show what a crisis we're in.
Definitely. And before we talk more about the crisis, I want to just back up a step and have you explain to listeners what the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities is, how it's funded, and what your specific role is in it, Beth.
Sure. Thanks for that question. We are federally mandated through a piece of legislation called the Developmental Disabilities Act that was signed into law by John Kennedy to look after the best interests of and advocate for people with the most significant disabilities in the state. So there is a border council like ours in every state and territory, and they get a small amount of dollars from the federal government. And then our board and every council is, those members are people living with lived experience with disability. So we have a board of about 32 people, 26 were appointed by the governor, and they're living with disability or are a caregiver or family member of someone with a disability. We're charted with going out across the state, figuring out what the biggest issues and problems are, and then developing a plan, and then using advocacy, and pilot projects like small grants, innovation things to test new ways to do things, and then advocate and serve as a policy advisor for the governor, the legislature, and state agencies.
Wow.
So it's kind of a big role.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like you have much to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a small staff of 7 full-time people. But really, you know, our volunteer board members, they're the ones pounding the pavement in the communities and coming back to us and telling, you know, us what is most important. And this caregiver crisis is at the top of the list throughout the state.
Definitely. Well, and as the executive director of that, Beth, I just want to thank you from a personal standpoint, because with a daughter with developmental disabilities, I have benefited directly, as has Nicole, from the board and its work and yours individually.
Same.
Well, thank you.
Yes, same. And I just wanted to clarify for listeners, because you are a part of an organization that serves people with disabilities, that this issue that we're talking about, the caregiver crisis, impacts all people requiring care. They may rely on paid caregiver support, such as elder care, those with chronic health conditions, veterans. I mean, you could even throw child care in the mix, correct?
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for sure.
So all of this is just different people that are getting impacted by the fact that they need some additional support. And for a long time, that was a family member, right? But as you pointed out, we didn't have people with developmental disabilities living as long as they are today. We didn't have people in general living as long as they are today. So what was a family role that would be a much shorter role back, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, definitely 20 years ago, is now getting extended longer and longer and longer. The family can't respond to it. And so what we're trying to talk about here is that people then were hiring folks in the last, I don't know, what do we want to say, decade or two? But now that role is not something, that job, I guess, is something that's so hard to fill because of some of the stuff you've already touched on.
And I would add to that too, that there was the role has changed through the years, I would think, to some degree, right? The amount of medical care, the amount of involvement, you know, it just seems much more intense, complex than it was in decades past.
Right. And if you want to do a historical perspective, 50, 60 years ago, we had 10,000 people with disabilities living in institutions. And so that was part of the reason they weren't living very long, quite frankly, was because the institutional care was not supportive of, a vibrant life or even the basics, right? And so there weren't as many families caring for people because they were told by medical professionals to put their loved one in an institution. So we have that sort of dark chapter in every state's history. But I think, to your point of who's impacted by this, yes, we know 90-year-old caregivers who are caring for a 65-year-old son or daughter with a disability. We also, though, know, a lot of people in their 30s and 40s who are caring for children with disabilities, even young children, and they're also caring for their aging parents. Mm-hmm. So this just hits so many different people. And, it really gets to the heart of Wisconsin, whether we want to have livable communities or not, because as so many people are assuming caregiving roles, they're leaving the job market. And we just did a survey with the Survival Coalition of 20 disability organizations. The data is just in, 270 people responded. And I think it was 63% have reduced their work. Their professional work, or quit entirely. So this is, employers are saying we can't find talented people. We have 7 people on our staff. We just lost somebody to a caregiving issue. Wow. So it's a crisis in their own family and they had to leave. So this is hitting everybody. It's not just the families who have that loved one. It is an economic issue. It's a social issue. It's a justice issue.
Great point. And I know that one of the things I want to make sure is clear for our audience is the use of language, right? And so when we're talking about a family caregiver, we're talking about somebody who's taking care of someone who's in their family, right? They may or may not get paid, most of the time not. But tonight, what we're asking for you to give us insight on is the paid caregiver. And I know there are words that are used like home health care provider, respite provider, direct care worker. When we're talking about the paid caregiver crisis, can you explain some of these different roles being referred to?
Right. So most people with disabilities and older adults want to stay in their homes and their communities, right? Like they don't want to go into a nursing home or an institution if they don't have to. And so many of the supports over the last couple decades have really altered to be able to support that kind of lifestyle. So we're talking about people who may come in and do some supportive home care, some light cleaning, some shopping, some housekeeping, or just be the watchful eyes, to make sure that nothing is amiss, right? So it might be as little as 10 hours a week. It could, and then there are people who need round the clock support. They have complex health issues, but they want to live at home. They don't want to be at a nursing home or an institution. So those are the kinds of folks. But then there are also people who support people with disabilities on their jobs, who help them find jobs and then support them to be successful on the job. There are people who do, a few little medical things or maybe just hygiene things. So it's a very wide range of folks involved in the caregiving situation.
Thank you for pointing that out, because I didn't want listeners to be confused when it comes to what is a caregiver and what are those roles. One may think that it only really is something that is a problem in the hospitals or something that is a problem if you're dealing with medically frail or, people that need a lot of care. But it is a large range and across the board. You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Beth Swedeen from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities about the paid caregiver crisis. When we come back, we're going to talk more about how we can address this problem going forward.
Are record high energy and water costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive. While you may not ask for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund, and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help. That's www.heat.help.
You care for the house, the kids, and our future. Ashiro's day is never done. So let's start saving a little more now. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings. Visit AshiroRetirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy today with a high of 80. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for scattered storms tonight. Lows level off around 49. Cloudy skies. Overcast skies. Tomorrow, isolated thunderstorms likely. Daytime highs approaching 58. Mid-60s Tuesday with a chance for scattered showers. Upper 60s Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Lynn, when you share your sentiment, and you've done that on some of your posts, that the concept of a work-life balance is a myth, it seems as if you are speaking to that same sense of how unsustainable this experience of being a working family caregiver can be. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you have that perspective or your experience from it?
Yes, it's why I use the roller coaster metaphor. It's the roller coaster really exemplifies what it feels like. Because you're either like soaring down this like deep, you know, hill, or you're kind of inching up a little bit and maybe you're at the top and you can get a really beautiful view. So there, to me, there is no work-life balance. And one of the reasons that I believe that is because business is personal. And it's not separate from who we are as human beings. So when we have jobs to show up at, it's important to be treating the whole human, the whole human.
And okay, so you're saying, say that to me again about business, especially having been a, more of a teacher and not quite having the business background. Can you speak? Can you help me out there a little bit, please?
Well, for me, being a lifelong entrepreneur, business has always been personal. Right. I grew up in a family business. We didn't have a turnoff switch. There was no way to turn off business. We were always talking about what happened during the day in the business.
What type of business was it again, Lynn?
Well, one part of it was roller skating rinks in the Detroit area.
Cool.
So it was kind of interesting. I still roller skate to this day, only now I'm roller skating at the beach instead of inside a roller rink in Detroit.
Nice.
So that was one. My grandfather immigrated here from Baghdad, Iraq, and he started up this chain of roller skating rinks in the Detroit area. And so that was part of it. The other part was that my dad was an attorney. And so he did own a roller skating rink as well, but also I was a legal secretary. And so there was always talk about business. It's never seemed to end. And that's why I say, work-life balance? Forget that. It doesn't exist. It's a myth. So I think many people are trying to attain a balance in their lives. And sometimes especially when you're starting a business, it's just all uphill and it's risky and it's scary. It's just like that cancer journey or that any other caregiving journey at home. It's risky. It seems like it's all uphill. It seems like you're never going to get a rest or a break, much less have a good night's sleep. So in that sense, it really is a myth to me. And so that's why I relaxed about it over these years. And that's part of my personal transformation, is just to chill out and not put expectations on myself that are unrealistic. So when we have a break, when we have a rest, when we have the good times and the upswings, great. We enjoy that. And then when we have like go, 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 produce, whether it's in business or in the at home caregiving, it's all the same. It's just, you know, what I always like to say now is that we need to manage our energy much more than we need to manage our time.
Ooh, I like that, especially as someone who just today was saying that one of my biggest challenges is time management. And it is right. Well, oh, wow. Okay, wait, let's dig into that for a second. Right. Because managing time, I can't control time. And so I don't manage it very well. So tell me what you mean by managing energy instead.
So time is finite. We can't, like you said, we can't control it. Energy is something that flows, right? It comes and it goes. And everything is energy. Money is energy. You know, relationships are energy. Everything is energy. So what happens and what has happened with me in the last many years, especially since my mom died, is that even at work, I've learned to manage my energy much more than my time, because I'll admit it right here in front of all of you, I am a recovering workaholic. And so as an entrepreneur, and I mentioned this earlier, that we, you know, we always would talk about business even at home at the end of the day. And that never stops. So now it's much more about holding my energy in chunks, kind of like, that's not really a great way to say it, but.
No, I'm following you. And I'm also having this weird life transition myself from going from being a classroom teacher to starting this business. And I was sharing with some friends, I mean, a classroom teacher, my time was controlled by bells. I mean, it was so structured. There were literally bells telling me where to be and when to be there. And now it's exactly what you're describing, where life and work and caregiving and fun and personal, you know, exploration is so intertwined. And so I get what you mean by this chunks of energy. Where am I going to put that energy? And how am I going to direct that energy? Because time is not really my friend.
Yes. And also building in the pause and building in a less structured day sometimes. So I used to have like Mondays, I left Mondays without scheduling too much. And that way I knew on Mondays I could schedule a coffee or a walk with a friend, for example.
Wow. Exactly.
So it's managing the energy has really come in handy, and I'm not always perfect at it. And it's, you know, a constant practice. It really is a practice, and just that.
Well, great. I really am appreciative that you've reminded me of that. Before we pivot to adding Angela Howard and her work on changing the culture of workplaces, can you tell listeners one more time where they can go learn more about you and where to order your book?
Yes, it's lynnabatejohnsonbook.com. And that's LYNNABATEJOHNSONBOOK.
All right. Perfect. We'll be back in just a moment to start talking about possible solutions to creating some of these caregiver-friendly workplaces.
On air at 92.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News special report. 8 people are dead and several others injured when a gunman opened fire on an outlet mall in Allen, Texas, near Dallas. Reporter Chris Fox.
No information provided on the gunman who was killed. U.S. Congressman Keith Self represents the area.
We owe a debt of gratitude to first responders that ran toward the gunfire and acted swiftly to neutralize the threat.
3 of the wounded are clinging to life in critical condition in a local trauma facility.
Allen Police Chief Brian Harvey.
We are asking for the public's help. If you are a witness, if you have any video.
This man was shopping when the gunshots started ringing out. He said he's thankful for those working at the time of the tragedy.
The manager at Johnson Murphy was super helpful. We all shuttled him in the back. We locked the doors.
Again, 8 were killed. The gunman dead as well in a mass shooting last night near Dallas, Texas. CBS News Special Report. I'm Stacy Lynn.
Feeling down, anxious, depressed? You are not alone. According to the World Health Organization, approximately 280 million people have depression, but the majority never receive treatment. At WellPoint Care Network, they can help. Their outpatient clinic staff are both qualified and caring, not to mention highly trained in partnering with you on your healing journey. Make an appointment today at wellpointcare.org. They serve all ages, infants, children, and adults. Both in-person and virtual services are available. Learn more at wellpointcare.org.
Are record high energy and water costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive. While you may not ask for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help. That's www.heat.help.
Have fun on the lake this summer. Treat yourself and find the watercraft you want at Action Boathouse Showroom just south of 59 on 164 in Waukesha. Check out the fun and versatile Sea-Doo Switch with its powerful Rotex jet engine. Action Boathouse Showroom also has a selection of luxury fishing boats or pontoon boats from 7 top USA manufacturers. The team at Action Boathouse Showroom is excited to help you launch into the sun this season and onto the lake. Action Boathouse Showroom, just north of 59 on 164 in Waukesha.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
High pay with excellent benefits? Check. Fair treatment and safe work conditions? Check. A paid training program? Check. Check all of your career boxes with the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades of District Council 7. Experienced industrial painters and drywall finishers needed now or become an apprentice. Call Tom Coyne at 262-488-4839 today. 262-488-4839 or go to IUPATDC7.com.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. We were just speaking with Lynn Abati Johnson, the author of Out of Love, about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her journey of working while being a caregiver. You can find her book on her website, www.lynnabatijohnsonbook.com, and on Amazon. I'm excited to welcome our next guest, who Liza found going down one of her many rabbit holes in the research she does for our show. We have with us Angela Howard from Call of Culture. She's an organizational psychologist, speaker, and culture impact strategist with a mission to create more human-centric workplaces that send happier and more fulfilled humans home to further enrich their communities and society. Angela, please tell us a little bit about yourself. Welcome. And what's going on over at Call for Culture?
Hi, Kristen. Hi, Lynn. It's so good to be with you both. And thank you for having me on. I am Angela Howard. Thank you for the introduction. I'm the CEO at Call for Culture. We work with organizations to create safer, more inclusive workplace cultures. And we do that through a process which is really centered on organizational psychology and how humans actually operate in the workplace. And Lynn, I loved what you said earlier about we bring our whole selves to work. So I think we've created some mismatched paradigms when it comes to the workplace around what we're expecting people to be and do. And so we're trying to bring more humanity back into the workplace.
Okay. And so I had stated in your introduction that your mission is to create this more human-centric workplace. And I know that's what caught Liza's attention. And so I think you just described exactly what a human-centric workplace is, but is there any more you want to add to that?
Yeah, it's really around designing spaces and organizations and businesses around people. And what we know is organizations that have been able to operationalize their culture in a way that actually fits the people who are doing the work, they get better results, more productivity, less turnover, more innovation, less safety incidents. So we know it's not only good for people and humanity, but also for the bottom line.
Okay. I want to talk about the bottom line in a few minutes, but before we do that, I want to make the connection to family caregivers since this is a family caregiver show. And it kind of seems sort of obvious to me, but I'm not sure if it's obvious to you or to an employer that having a more human-centric workplace might mean it's a little bit easier for me to be at work as a family caregiver. So before you dive into the whole business piece, do you have any personal experience as a family caregiver?
Yes. Yes. So my father passed away back in May of 2015. So Lynn, I kind of clutched my heart when you told your story because it certainly hits home for me. Before I started my business, I worked in corporate America. And, you know, so Lynn, I also understand the environment that you were in. But I was lucky enough to work in an organization where my leadership created a flexible and safe environment for me to be able to express what I needed at that time.
When my father, that had to be fairly unique.
That felt unique to me, yes. Okay. And talking to other people and understanding how workplace culture works traditionally, this is also the reason why I started my business, because this was a unique experience and it shouldn't be. And in my case, when I was bringing that forward to my leader, I had just started the job. So no reason for them to be like, take all the time you need, but that's exactly what they did. They said, take all the time you need. You've been here a week, but we trust you. And that piece increased my loyalty by a millionfold in the future. And I added great value for that company. So that's my personal story.
That's great. And how do you take that now into the work you're doing to bring not just a caregiver-friendly workplace and a human-centric workplace, but one where it's actually being implemented?
Yes. So I think culture, inclusion, all these are buzzwords that we say a lot, right? And so I think it's really important for organizations to match their words with their actions. If we're going to say we're going to be an inclusive workplace, that also has to include the human experience and a diverse set of life events, which includes caregiving. And really it all comes down to leadership. And I think what I find most working with organizations is oftentimes there is a mismatch between what we say, we care about people, we want to be inclusive, this is a people-centered work environment, and then what actually gets done within the organization and how the leaders show up and provide space, a safe space for their people. And so that's what we're trying to combat, for lack of better words.
Okay. And so how does that turn? I'm really appreciative that you are ready to take some of the buzzwords out of the conversation, right? Because I think that's probably why I was tripping over some of them in your introduction, is they are all over the place. And I'm not sure as a result, they have the meaning they need anymore. You know, our DEI work, I just sometimes kind of, you know, sort of ponder, well, what do you mean by DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, when it doesn't really necessarily look like it's diversity, equity, and inclusion from a whole human standpoint? It might be from a gender standpoint. It might be from a racial ethnic standpoint, but it might not necessarily really look at the whole human being. And so I love that you're recognizing that and you're saying, we're going to, you didn't say combat, did you? You said address.
I did say combat.
You did some. Okay, good. I was like, is it just me who wants to go out and fight?
We're challenging.
All right, perfect. And so tell me on a real specific way, if I was an employer, how would you be helping me combat that disconnect of what I might be talking about and wanting, but not actually being able to create in my work environment?
So the first step is defining it and naming it. So we work with organizations to pick apart those buzzwords. We look at their value system. And in some organizations, that value system may look like core values or words on a wall or beautiful words on a website. But we go in there and we work with the team to define and align behaviors around what it looks like and what it doesn't look like. And that's part of the secret sauce, because that is going to allow us to create a roadmap in understanding where we actually are versus where we want to go. So we have an assessment that we use that actually measures that. And that assessment considers everyone in the organization. So if supporting caregivers or supporting our employees through life events is important, we're going to ask the right questions to get at that and understand what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And then we work with the organization to create a roadmap and we measure along the way.
Excellent. So let's first start with, if I was an employer right now and I was listening to this show, or I was married to an employer or a daughter of an employer who I know needed your services, how could they find you?
So you can find us at callforculture.com.
Okay.
That's the best way to get to us.
Excellent. And then they bring you in and you start talking about the kind of services and packages and assessments and that type of stuff.
Yep. All of our signature package is a long-term partnership. So my team works with the organization from 12 to 18 months. Culture change is not easy and it's not fast. So we're really kind of a partner and a guide along the way.
Okay. And are you finding that organizations that do hire you and partner with you are really trying to look at the whole human experience, or are they bringing you in to kind of meet some of their DEI data and their DEI goals? You know, is there true authenticity behind this?
It's a great question. So sometimes yes and sometimes no. And we've been doing a very good job at filtering some of those, because we prefer not to work with the organizations who are just looking to check a box. And we do what we can up front to be clear that we're going to be your guide, but this is a commitment that has to be sustainable.
Okay.
You all will have to do the work.
I like it.
You're there to guide.
Exactly. And so don't invest in us, right? If you're not going to actually follow the roadmap we're going to create together. That's beautiful. Now I want to pivot to, okay, now I'm sitting in the audience, which most of us as family caregivers are probably not the leaders and the decision makers because of the life journeys we've been on. And so what can I do as a family caregiver at my workplace where I know they need your perspective, right? And so I can maybe suggest that they bring you in, but what are some other things that I could do to encourage, ask for, direct the workplace from the bottom up, right? From the employees to kind of demand, or, you know, if we're going to fight the fight, ladies, right, we're going to combat, but we're also going to demand some of this change. So what's some advice you want to give caregivers?
Yeah. So I do think a lot of culture change is a groundswell. So all of you who are listening, there is a great opportunity for you to be leaders. Leadership is a capability. It's not a role within an organization. So I think you could use some of your leadership skills to talk to your leader, to integrate in with any initiatives that are already happening, whether it's under the umbrella of DE&I or culture transformation or improvement, continuous improvement. Attach this to something that's already happening in the organization and bring this as an opportunity to amplify voices around your community and what you're passionate about.
That's beautiful. That's really good. I mean, there's something you said that I want to kind of go back to. You said, what was the first sentence that you said again about
Ooh.
I know. Sorry. That's probably not the best way to ask a question. But you were saying essentially a take the experience and an initiative and do what with them?
So a great way to create change and movement is to integrate what's already happening. So if there is a strategic initiative at the organization around DE&I or people first or people over profits or culture transformation, start talking to the people who are running those programs. So you can really amplify your voice as a caregiver and provide that perspective, and also maybe starting to talking to other caregivers around the organization and understanding where the opportunities are, and being the integrator of all that information to roll up to the decision makers.
Excellent. Okay. That's exactly what I was looking for, is that piece that gives me some empowerment, right? Mm. That I actually can find the right way, because I do think a common message that I've heard from people, and Lynn brought it up in some of the posts that she's had, that it's scary and intimidating to tell your employer that you're a family caregiver. I mean, and as you said earlier, your experience was pretty unique, that mm-hmm. 1 week into the job, they said, take all the time you need. I don't know that you're the exception to the norm from many of the stories that I've listened to. And I'm glad you had that. And it's not to make you feel guilty or, you know, special for it. It's just recognizing that since that isn't the norm, what we can do as family caregivers is find where we have those pathways, take advantage of that. And really, I, like you said, partner it and connect it to what is trying to be implemented in some of the strategies. Okay. What kind of pushback do you get from organizations and employers, though? And how do you respond to that? Because I'm sure they're out there.
Oh, yes. I think a lot of times what we find is organizations hire us because they want to send a message to their people and say, see, this is what you need to do differently. 100% of the time, it's leadership.
Mm.
99.9% of the time, it's leadership.
Okay.
So usually it's some mismatch of what we say and what we do when it comes to leadership behavior, in groups and out groups when it comes to leadership. So the pushback happens when the mirror is in their face, to be honest. And you're hearing things like, you know, this is not about money, or it's not about a paycheck. I want to work for an organization where I feel like I belong and I'm safe here. Mm-hmm. And the leaders who are running this company do not make me feel that way. So we spend a lot of time with leadership and role modeling, and also accountability. Accountability is really important in making sure that you're driving that value system that you've developed as an organization.
And how can you get the leadership to do that, though?
Well, oftentimes we do it with data. So thankfully, we have an assessment that really makes it very clear where the issues are. And we work directly with the top level leader in the organization, the CEO, the founder. We don't do any work that's buffered. So we always require that CEO, that top level leader, is a part of the conversation. And that ensures that the commitment gets impacted all the way throughout the organization. Accountability takes time, but leadership development is also an important tool to send the message of what's important, and then hold people, coach people, and then hold people accountable to that.
Excellent. Well, when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more with both of these experienced and intelligent women to help craft an explanation for why everyone should care about creating these caregiver-friendly work environments and this work-centric approach.
Are record high energy and water costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive. While you may not ask for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help. That's www.heat.help.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
We stand on the shoulders of women who came before us.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn.
Join us. Visit WeSaySaveIt.org and take control of your financial future by saving for retirement.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 80. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight, 49. Cloudy skies expected. Isolated thunderstorms likely tomorrow, high of 58, cloudy. Chance for scattered showers Tuesday, with highs in the mid-60s, mainly clear Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
You've been listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show with Kristen Voss and myself, Liza Hellenbrand. We've been talking with Beth Swedeen from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities.
The board is offering to businesses grant funds and technical assistance so that they can tap into new talent and learn best practices for finding, hiring, and supporting workers with intellectual developmental disabilities. Grantees will receive technical assistance from a BPDD, so that's the board, project consultant to plan and implement their hiring initiative. Deadline to apply for these grants is Wednesday, May 24th at 5 p.m. Beth, I want to give you an opportunity before we say goodnight to you tonight to just give a little plug for that grant or give a little bit more context for it.
Well,
yeah, sure. We hear from businesses all the time that they would love to hire more people with disabilities, but they don't quite know maybe how to support them, or they don't want, you know, an outside agency coming in to provide that support that none of the other colleagues know. So we have this model called Partners with Business that helps businesses figure out the strategies to hire their own workers with disabilities and then how to support them naturally on the job so that like an outside job coach doesn't need to come in. And it's been really exciting to see businesses experience that success and realize what great workers people with disabilities can be and how little actual accommodation really needs to happen. And then there's some other strategies for funding it as well. And any business that applies and would be interested would get access to that information as well.
And then there's one more grant that I want to make sure that we mention, and those are for those who are involved with supported employment service providers. The board is granting funds for technical assistance to take new or creative approaches to reduce the need for job coaching. And that deadline is Friday, May 26th at 5 p.m. So Beth, I just want to ask, is there anything that you want to add to that one? And then where can people go to learn more or to apply for these grants?
Yeah, that is for, like you said, vocational agencies that are in the business of supporting people with disabilities on the job. And as we mentioned, the caregiver crisis, there just aren't enough staff for these folks to hire, right? So they're using different strategies to support their clients that don't cost as much because they are not, they don't cost as much, but they don't require as many staff is the aim for that. And it's especially helpful in rural areas where job coaches may drive like 20 miles, you know, to support somebody, and then they have to drive another 25 to their next client. So we're really encouraging people to apply for those. And yeah, all of our stuff is on our website, which is WI-BPDD, Board for People with Developmental Disabilities.org. Or you can just Google us, Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, and we'll pop right up for you.
And let's say the name of those two grants one more time, Beth.
Yeah, they're both called Partners with Business. One is for private businesses, for-profit businesses, and other are for the provider agencies that already are working with clients who have disabilities.
Yeah. And I wanted to share the one with the employment agencies, because there may not be a lot of people from, you know, DVR or vocational agencies listening to the program tonight, but there are caregivers that have people supported by job coaches. So if they know about this, they can speak to the employer, they can speak to the job coach and see how they can make this transition.
Wonderful. Beth, thank you so much for the work that you do and taking time out of your evening to be with us. As you know, I've really seen you as this shining star, as I said last segment, and it's just been wonderful to be able to have you on the show and highlight your work and all that the board is doing. So thanks so much.
Thanks to both of you. It's a great program. Really appreciate your attention.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
And we have a group of four amazing UW student volunteers helping us this semester put together our gift boxes for caregivers, among many other things. So it is with great delight that we get to send one of these off in the mail tomorrow. And Kristen, I'm going to let you share Jenna's story.
All right. Jenna sent in an empowering story about her mother, Pam. She wrote, "My mom is amazing. 2 weeks after they moved into their new house, my grandpa had his first health incident that brought him into their home much sooner than they even planned. Lots of surgeries in Green Bay and Milwaukee and wound care, along with a healthy diet, which 3 years later made him healthier than when he lived alone. Taking INR at home, drug refills, everything. I help when I can, but I have school and work. My mom should have been a nurse. She researches everything on grandpa and does what is best." She goes on to even write, "During all of this, my mom runs and works at her business full-time and the household along with my grandpa. She gets overwhelmed and tired, but for 5.5 years, at 88, grandpa is healthier than he was on his own. He has some dementia issues, so that adds a little more. My dad works till 6 to 7 p.m., and he helps when he can, but my mom is the lead person for his dad." Jenna continues to write, "Mom has had no girlfriends or social life since 6 years ago because she puts grandpa and everything else first. Pam, you are amazing, and we can't wait to put your gift box in the mail with love. And if anyone else out there wants to nominate a special caregiver in your life, look for us on our website, www.empoweredcaregivercommunity.com.
Yes. And next week, we are going to be speaking with Love Inc. And I know, Kristen, that one is on your to-do list.
Yep.
Do you know what specifically they're going to be sharing with us, or are we keeping it a surprise?
No, it's really exciting. Love Inc., we've had on the executive director, but they are an organization that really provides support for adults with disabilities so that they can do more things in the community. And they're this kind of paid support that we've been talking about tonight. One of the primary programs that we're going to be hearing about is the Bridge Builder program. And Bridge Builders are people that are paid to help people with disabilities, young adults with disabilities, build bridges in their communities at things that they're interested in. So in Nicole's case, they've been going to On Board to play different board games. They've gone to the library. They help find different people that are peers that they can do social activities with. So we're going to be hearing about the Bridge Builder program and a few of the other initiatives that Love Inc. is taking around the state to support people outside of Dane County.
That Love Inc. just does so many amazing things. Yeah. But I just want to circle back tonight in this paid caregiver crisis. What is your biggest takeaway?
Wow. Really understanding how huge Medicaid is and how backwards our state is, that we are one of the few that's not taking that expansion. And I just find that criminal.
Not that I want to throw Mississippi under the bus, but come on.
I know. Exactly.
I've heard that. We're Mississippi.
Really? I haven't heard that one yet, but now I can see where it fits. I mean, it is kind of scary. I never thought we'd be. And again, you're right. We shouldn't throw Mississippi or Louisiana under the bus, but I never thought we would be ranked behind
stuff. Given that we're a leader in this, right? You know, and we're a leader, I think, in the country in a lot of do good ways. Mm-hmm. So it's disheartening to know that we are trailing behind and in a quote last.
But we can do this. And yes. We know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with our positive note. You got this. And together we are stronger. So stay connected to the empowered caregiver community. Good night, everybody.
If you own a small to medium-sized business that kept employees on payroll through COVID, you may have a big cash refund waiting for you. The Employee Retention Credit is a tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee. And now, more businesses than ever qualify. The experts at RefundsPro.com specialize in cutting through the red tape of qualifying for this government program. Most of their refunds are over $100,000. Even businesses that have received PPP funds may be eligible. And there are absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund, so there's no reason not to apply. If your business experienced shutdowns, limited capacity, supply chain challenges, or reduced revenue due to COVID, you likely qualify. RefundsPro.com has already helped hundreds of businesses. So don't lose the refund you're owed by missing the deadline. Get started today with a free 5-minute questionnaire at RefundsPro.com. That's Refunds with an S, Pro.com.
You are listening to...